Hey guys, how's it going? Welcome to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. I just did one of them spit takes like on the sitcom. Almost. New polls out show Trump is out in front. Cruz surging. Rubio sinking. That's what Fox says. They got the judge on there. I like the judge. Anyway, ain't it great? The entire Republican field, 20-something guys, all of them a bunch of lunatics. Boobs and incompetence. Goofballs and nut bars. and Trump showing them all up. American Republicans love authoritarianism. They just love it. What? There's a problem? Don't worry. Trust me. I'll solve it. Yeah, good enough for me, they cry. What more do you need? All right. Well, anyway. I don't know. Actually, I'll go ahead and tell you. There's a segue there. Jeff Tucker has written two great articles about fascism. One of them is about how, hey guys, Trump is a fascist. We have a name for this phenomenon, and it's this guy's, that's what it's called. Mm-hmm. And then the second one is developing the theme about fascism a bit further. Not so much focused on Trump, but America. Anyway, good stuff there. Jeff Tucker at liberty.me and the Foundation for Economic Education. And we did an episode of Eye on the Empire yesterday. You can find it there at liberty.me. Liberty.me. And I interviewed him about Trump last week, too. Or was it 2 weeks ago? Anyway. If you want to go back and hear that. All right, so today on the show we'll have our friend Grant Smith back to talk about the Pollard case. Did you hear Obama's going to let Pollard out of prison? As a sop to the Israelis. Not that they'll stop opposing the Iran deal, but a sop to him anyway. What a disgrace. I mean, he's not going to pardon the guy, but apparently they're going to kind of pressure the parole board or some kind of crap to get this thing done. Anyway. So we'll have Grant Smith on to talk all about that. And you guys know about Grant Smith, the Institute for Research Middle Eastern Policy. He does, he's the Jason Leopold of the Israel lobby. That's what he does. He's a FOIA ninja. That's the Freedom of Information Act. He gets in there and he gets the goods. And very important stuff. You ought to pay close attention. The Institute for Research Middle East Policy, that's IRMEP, IRMEP, IRMEP.org. And it's just, I don't know, search site for .pdf and see what you get. You might have lots and lots of fun. Reading all about the Israeli government's dirty tricks in the United States. That's what it is. All right, he's coming up on the show. We're going to talk about that. All right, cool. So the Wall Street Journal piece is U.S. preparing to release convicted Israeli spy Jonathan Pollard, officials say. And I know what you're saying, but Scott, we don't know it's true until they officially deny it. Well, they did. The Obama administration officially denied it, so you can take it to the bank. But anyway, we'll get back to Pollard and the lobby when Grant Smith joins us in a while. Here's something fun, pointed out by a friend on Twitter this morning. They published David Vine in the New York Times. I like David Vine. He's the guy that wrote the book about the Chagossians, the people of Diego Garcia, who were basically kidnapped and cleansed from that UK, aka US, base there in the Indian Ocean. And kicked off and sent to Mauritania. Or wait, No, Mauritius is the island. Mauritania is in West Africa. I always get those things confused because, well, you know, I'm from Texas. Huh? But anyway, yeah, all the people, they got rounded up and kidnapped. And cover your kids' ears. They gassed all their dogs in front of them before they put them on the boat. It's like some kind of Holocaust documentary. Horrible tale. Anyway, so he wrote the book on that, Island of Shame. And then he's got a new book coming out that's just all about the Empire bases. He's picking up where Chalmers Johnson left off. Chalmers Johnson, who died, geez, I don't know, quite a few years ago now. But David Vine is, you know, he and Nick Turse both are, you know, the world's experts outside of the military on America's bases around the world. And they published them in the New York Times? Wow, cool. New York Times. Don't just close bases at home. Close them overseas. And here's the important part. U.S. troops in Saudi Arabia were part of Osama bin Laden's professed motivation for the 9/11 attacks. Everybody knows that. It's on the PBS NewsHour website. You can read the fatwas from 1996 and 1998. Both of them go on at length about that. And how that's basically the primary deal. That was what he hated about the Saudis so much that he wanted the war. Was that they let it be that way. And anyway, if I titled this clip correctly, here's Cheney explaining that he promised to leave Saudi Arabia right after the first Gulf War. He was the Secretary of Defense then.
And then the king turned back to me after a couple of minutes and he said, okay, we'll do it.
Turn that up for you a little bit.
And then the king turned back to me after a couple of minutes and he said, okay, we'll do it. But he had two conditions. One, that you bring enough force to do it right and to get it done. And secondly, that you'll leave when it's over with. And I committed, gave him my word on that basis. I knew that's what the president wanted to do anyway.
The president had already, in effect, authorized you to, had said we were willing to send troops.
I was there to close the deal, in effect.
Yeah.
So the president had authorized Cheney, told him what to say, and the promise was they would leave as soon as the war was over. And what did they do? They stayed in the name of the no-fly zones and dual containment of Iraq and Iran at the insistence of the Israelis and their lobbyists inside the Clinton administration. And they waged an economic war against the Iraqis, killing 1 million people, 1 million excess deaths compared to how they were living in just the, year and a half between the Iran-Iraq war and the first Gulf War? It was a destitute country. And then America just completely destroyed it, put a blockade on them that killed 500,000 kids, no matter what Matt Welch says. And that's what led to the attack. And that's what bin Laden says. He goes, you got your troops on our holy Arabian Peninsula in order to murder Iraqis from there. Well, we'll show you. And, of course, I'm not trying to leave out Israel, but I'm citing from here, is, you know, the Israeli occupation of Lebanon and Palestine feature very prominently in both fatwas in 96 and 98 as well. And a lot of other rhetoric of al-Qaeda before the September 11th attack. And yet, here's my point. Hey, this made it into the New York Times. The editors of the New York Times saw fit. Write it down, everybody. More than halfway through 14 years later to admit the truth. They attacked us because of America's policies. Not because Islam made them hate good things. Oh, sorry. That was a giant lie we let you believe for two-thirds of a generation, but here you go. We'll let David Vine go ahead and sneak the truth in here for you. The end of July 2015. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still. If you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders, quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. and, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. Which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Coming up, Grant Smith here in a little while. This is the part of the show we like to call hashtag truncating the antecedents. Isn't that a great new hashtag? There's a hashtag like that. Truncating the antecedents. The 1990s? Huh? I don't know what you're talking about. You mean things happen before other things happen? And you're saying that one thing had an effect on the other. Huh. All right, well. I don't know. I guess that's possible. So Sheldon Richman just sent me this thing. It's the Washington Times. U.S. troop withdrawal. Let Islamic State enter Iraq, military leaders say. Oh, yeah, no. It was nothing that they did. It was only things that they were prevented from doing that just ruined everything, see? This is a great bit of propaganda. You remember when you were a little kid, the first time you ever saw on a TV show, hopefully a TV show is your first experience with this, not real life, where someone is sworn to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. In other words, no lies by omission allowed. You gotta, you know, really say what you mean. Otherwise, you're lying. So the question is, as I decide to phrase it, if America kept all of its air power and all of its army and marines in Iraq forever, could they have fought the convoy of Toyotas that came across the Syrian border, erased the Syrian border as they came across it back 1 year ago and sacked Mosul? Could the U.S. have stopped them in that situation? Well, gee, I don't know. I guess so. Yeah, makes sense that the U.S. air power could have bombed the hell out of that convoy. In fact, they could have from the Mediterranean or the Persian Gulf when it happened in real time anyway, couldn't they have? Yes. But anyway, that's not the question. The question is, where's Uday and Kusay? And how come they're not around? And how come Baghdadi is the Caliph Ibrahim, self-declared? Oh, because America invaded. And why do the Sunnis put up with the Islamic State at all? Because they're, you know, at least in the name of protecting them from the Shiite militias that America put in power there and fought for 8 years. And these guys, you know, the hilarious desert ox, Ray Odierno, that's what our good friend Jeff Huber used to call him. He was like the bull blue to the tall tale of David Petraeus kind of thing. Anyway, I ruined the joke, but you get it. Odierno in here says, oh yeah, no, if we had been here, then you know what we could have done? A residual American air and land combat force could have steeled Iraqi security forces and blunted the Islamic State's invasion. Oh, not even prevented it, huh? Just blunted it. Of northern and western Iraq last winter and spring. The U.S. could have prevented the harm done to Iraq's command structure by Nouri al-Maliki as prime minister, and helped quell bickering among Shiite Sunnis and Kurds. Really? It wasn't the American invasion and picking sides of the Shia and the Kurds against the Sunnis that led to the situation. Maliki wasn't put in power by the United States of America in the first place, huh? And never even mind Bush years. How about the election of 2010 when Maliki lost? And believe it or not, Saddam and the CIA's old friend, Iyad Alawi, who was the first sock puppet dictator of the place, if you'll remember back from 2004 through 2005, he won. He had, under the Iraqi constitution that the Americans, the Iranians, and the Shiite and Kurdish majority agreed upon in 2004, he had the first right to try to form a new government. But Obama went with Maliki. Obama kept Maliki. It wasn't something that he didn't do. It was something that he did do. Was use whatever influence America had left in that country in its last 2 years of occupation. I mean, before they started occupying it again. They intervened to help Maliki stay in power in 2010. Remember, it wasn't resolved for quite a while. Obama helped resolve it in favor of Bush's sock puppet, Maliki. So, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you know what happened was we put this guy Maliki in there, and so we had to stay so that we could prevent all the harm that he was doing. Oh, okay. Oh, and then you kept him in there when the people unelected his sorry ass, huh? Oh, and then, but you had to stay to prevent, the harm. Prevent the bickering among Shiites, Sunnis, and Kurds. That's funny. What are they bickering about, the Shiites and the Kurds? They're bickering about the Kurds making their own separate deals with American oil companies and cutting Baghdad out of it. With what kind of companies? American oil companies? Republican ones. Like Standard Oil of New Jersey, a.k.a. Exxon. Anyway. Yes, if only America had its entire army occupy Iraq forever and ever, then I don't know what. They'd still be fighting for the Badr Brigade like they are right now. They'd still be fighting the Sunni-based insurgency like they are right now. Maybe they wouldn't have been able to declare a caliphate in Mosul. But now we get back to the other part of the antecedent excluded here, truncated by the desert ox, Odierno. Where'd the Islamic State come from? What is the Islamic State? Well, Al-Qaeda in Iraq was made up of a lot of foreigners from all over the place. The Syrian half of Al-Qaeda in Iraq from Iraq War II, from Odierno's war, they now go by the name of Al-Nusra. Many of them were still in Iraq, actually. And when America and Saudi decided on regime change in Syria in 2011, they went straight there. Then the more heavily Iraqi faction split off from the more heavily Syrian faction. So al-Nusra is al-Qaeda in Iraq in Syria, and the Islamic State is al-Qaeda in Iraq and some of Syria. That's all. It's the same damn group. And the difference between the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda is that Al-Qaeda still wants to attack the United States, whereas the Islamic State is saying, no, let's go ahead and get a move on and create a caliphate now instead of waiting till later. And America took their side. From 2011 through still to this day, they're backing al-Nusra. And that's what led to the rise of the Islamic State in Syria and then blew back into Iraq. So in other words, the Washington Times is completely full of crap, like always. Hey, Al Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code SCOTT when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future of Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Jacob Hornberger, tireless champion of liberty and president of the FFF, brings you the best libertarian writers every month on the topics that need our treatment the most. Read Jacob, Jim Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, Joe Stromberg, and more every month in The Future of Freedom. It's just $25 a year for the pocket-sized print edition, $15 to read it online. The Future of Freedom, fff.org/subscribe. All right, you guys. I'm Scott. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. Yeah. So that was truncating the antecedents. Did you like it? Pretty great, huh? All right. Hey, listen, I never did get a chance really to talk about Sandra Bland last week. But I meant to. So here, let me take a minute. I don't know whether she killed herself or whether she was murdered. I guess, sort of, it's looking more like she was murdered, more like a suicide. But either way, they killed her, even if she killed herself. They had no right to arrest her in the first place, and no right to charge her with assault on a cop, no right to put up a $5,000 bail. And no right to hold her there like that. I mean, it's too damn bad that she was in a bad enough spot. This is assuming that it was a suicide. It's too damn bad she couldn't last for 3 days under that stress. But they had no right to kidnap her in the first place. They had no right to put her in that position. So it's still, I don't know, what, man two or something like that? I don't know what you call it. But the cops are criminals. That's the thing of it. And, you know, it's amazing. Someone sent me yesterday. I'm trying to remember where I saw this. Maybe someone tweeted it to me or something. Or emailed me. I don't know. There's a screen capture of a conversation going on Facebook. It was all, you know, this uppity. I couldn't believe she used the word, the lady used that word. This uppity, back-talking black woman, blah, 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 blah. How dare you? You dare to talk back to authority in Texas, and you get exactly what you deserve. And we will stand by the cops 100%. That's just incredible to me that anybody of any color would identify with the state before their neighbor, before the innocent victim of police aggression. People just can't put themselves... You know, you have a choice, I guess, when you see that dash cam video. You identify with the cop or the person in the car. And, yeah, no. He asked her, is there something that you're upset about? So she answered him. And then so he fought her. And watch that video. And, you know, I don't know if this is, you know, how much this means, but they had an interview, the local news had an interview with the lady in the cell next door who said she was really distraught in there and how she couldn't figure out why it was that she had two other people in the cell with her, but Sandra Bland, she was alone in the cell next door. And she even said, you know, we would talk amongst ourselves and try to tell jokes and stories and laugh. And then, geez, I think actually that hurt her because she could hear us laughing. And that made her feel even more alone and abandoned over there and whatever, I guess. This and that. And there was a thing, I think it was the Houston Chronicle I read last night. It had many, many detailed quotes of Sandra Bland talking about her depression and post-traumatic stress, this and that. And reminded me of Rodney Dangerfield, actually, talking about waking up in the morning with the heaviness. I've never had to deal with anything like that. It sucks, the heaviness. But anyway, she was in there for the crime of contempt of cop, that's all. to put it in racial terms, he's the overseer, she's the slave. How dare she talk back? When in fact, supposedly, she's free. She's got the divine right of a king, and he is her lowly servant. Ha! How do you like that? Who believes that? Who believes that? That cop was ever Sandra Bland's security force sent there to protect her. And hell, the whole thing started, don't let me leave out, the whole thing started, she pulled over to get out of his way. And then he goes, oh, you're going to change lanes without a turn signal, huh? Are you kidding me? And then supposedly there's like a big gotcha that Jeff Tucker mentioned yesterday on the Eye on the Empire show that, oh, no, supposedly in the enhanced footage, you can tell that she rolled through a stop sign. So it wasn't just the lane change. It wasn't just that she was a black lady with an out-of-state plate. She had rolled through a stop sign. But that's not what he said, anyway. What he said was she changed lanes without a signal, which she only did to get out of his way because he was zooming up on her tail. She told her friend on the phone from jail she thought he was on his way to, you know, an emergency. Was she watching TV, said the cops are there to help people or something? I guess she knew better than that. But she just assumed, hey, he's flying by. Let me get the hell to the right. And he said, oh, trying to get her over to the right, huh? Anyway, what's going on now is that rich, white, hoity-toity types are starting to understand that, well, that doesn't really seem fair. And I don't think they understand that this happens to people all day, every day. You know, the first time I ever really learned about law, it was when I was a kid watching the Dukes of Hazzard. And the law was Boss Hogg and Roscoe P. Coltrane. The law wasn't a written set of rules agreed upon by free men and their representatives and within the limits of protecting individual rights. And no, the law was Boss Hogg says so. That's what the law is. And in fact, depending on the neighborhood, but in poor black neighborhoods, and not just black ones, but I guess among poor people in general, the cops are referred to as the law. And it's not just a slang for you could call them whatever you want, but it implies that thing about the law isn't rules. The law is what these thugs say, what they do. That's the law. If they kill you, that's the law. Simple as that. And Sandra Bland had every right to stand up for herself. You read any of the journalism coming out about this, there are a lot of different newspapers and lawyers who have chimed in and said she had the right to resist this guy. You know, all things being equal, he has the right to ask her to get out of the car if he has reason to fear for his safety or whatever, whatever. But he should have already let her go by then. She was free to go, should have been free to go before he ever asked her opinion, before he ever asked her to put out her cigarette. And no, he didn't have the right to tell her to put out her cigarette in her own car. And anyway, so the point is that you are not free. Especially you black people. But all the rest of you too. There is no rule of law. The Boss Hogg Roscoe P. Coltrane model is the rule around here. And that's the nicest spin you could put on it. But it's the rule of men is what it is. And the judges and the prosecutors and the cops will always protect each other no matter what. No matter what. They have sovereign immunity to commit any crime against you and get away with it. And so, you know, I guess it's been a while since I mentioned this, but I learned when I was a kid in driver's ed, if you ever get pulled over by a cop, especially at night, but really you ever get pulled over by a cop, leave your hands on the steering wheel. You don't know what's going through this cop's mind. He's got a gun. And just keep your hands on the steering wheel. But when I was a cab driver, I met young black kids, and they taught me that their grandmother had taught them that if they ever get pulled over, they are to put their hands out the window immediately, whether they're driving or riding. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. All right, guys, I got to get back to the war here, but I just want to make sure I stop talking about that Sandra Bland thing for a minute here. Sick and tired of cops killing people. Have been for a long, long time. All right. I just keep getting sicker of it, that's all. All right, so, yeah, man, so I told you last week there was that suicide attack in Turkey, and I said, well, so this opens up the possibility whether they're going to switch sides and start attacking the Islamic State now. And the answer is only sorta. They launched airstrikes against the Islamic State and the PKK. So, big question as to whether the Turkish civil war just started back up again. Of course, Bill Clinton had helped the Turks kill hundreds of thousands of Kurds. Well, I think so. Certainly tens and tens and tens of thousands of Kurds. A massive campaign against them in the 1990s, all with American weapons and equipment. And then they had some kind of peace deal, like their leader, Öcalan, or Öcalan, or whatever. He's in prison, but he's still the leader of the Kurds. And they have like an autonomy thing where, you know, the Turkish government is no longer trying to abolish the Kurdish language and deny that there's such a even ethnicity as Kurds, even though, you know, their language comes from an entire different branch of this and that and the other thing. You know, it really is a separate culture kind of deal as far as those things go. And the Turks had been trying to basically obliterate them, and they backed off of that. And they've had a somewhat peace for, I think, 15 years, right? But now, since the Kurds are basically on their own and yet successfully fighting off the Islamic State in what was formerly Syria and is now, I forgot what they're trying to call it now. They're trying to name it a new country of its own there, Northern Syrian Kurdistan, right on the Turkish border. And the Turkish government is freaking out, right? Because here are Kurds, revolutionary Kurds getting armed and winning. And so now I guess they're worried about maybe the Islamic State is that Frankenstein monster a little bit out of control. But you know who we also hate? The PKK. Let's bomb them too. So, yeah, what a mess over there, man. Where America, of course, Turkey is America's NATO ally since the end of the Second World War, since shortly thereafter. In America, as Charles Lister from the Brookings Institution has reported, the Americans and the Saudis have been in Turkey working with not just the moderates, but arming and backing the new Army of Conquest, which is just a fancy new rebranded name for Al-Qaeda. I wonder if there's like a cool PowerPoint presentation, right? Can't just see like the business lady from The Simpsons going, and that's why we've decided to rename Al-Qaeda the Army of Conquest. Doesn't that sound nice? The Army of Conquest. Anyway, so That's been the policy. Now, I guess, what does this mean? Does that mean that Al-Qaeda is cool, but the Islamic State's not? And they're going to really take it to the Islamic State? Well, at the same time, they're taking it to the Islamic State's greatest opponents in the region. The YPG and the PKK, Kurdish communists. It's like in Yemen, where America and Saudi Arabia are at least de facto, and if you listen to what Matthew Akin said on the show a couple of weeks ago, a little bit more than de facto in the case of Saudi, certainly, are backing Al-Qaeda against the Houthis, even while the Americans are bombing Al-Qaeda at the same time. On both sides of the Red Sea there, they're bombing in Somalia again now, too. So they're bombing, they're Al-Qaeda's Air Force, but they're, you know, getting some friendly fire strikes in, too. Wink, wink. Don't worry, it's not high treason, it's just low treason, see? It's, okay, it's like medium strength, medium height treason. Yeah, so what a mess, I don't know. And now, I've been saying this all along for years on end now, I'm sorry to bore you to death with it or whatever, but no, America should not back Assad like Bill Clinton and George W. Bush backed Assad. No, he is not their sock puppet in a Hosni Mubarak kind of a king of Jordan sort of a way. But he did kill jihadists for them. I like to quote Bob Baer, the former CIA officer, as saying, yeah, our slogan was, if you want them tortured, you send them to Syria. You want them to disappear forever, you send them to Egypt. And that was the policy ever since the 1990s. In fact, I think Michael Scheuer has verified that on the show as well. Yeah, Assad, he'll kill these guys for us or whatever. But of course, this is, you know, you can't, this is sort of the lesson of the terror war, assuming anyone, you know, means to win it or end it in any serious way, is that if we back the sectarian dictators against these guys, we give them a reason to exist, a reason to target us. And then our other choice, apparently, in Washington, D.C., as they've decided, is to outright back their revolutions, like in Libya and in Syria, which is just as bad or worse. Just as bad, I guess, as what Bush did by, you know, turning over Western Iraq to him for all those years, is Obama deliberately taking their side. And that was, again, you know, Bush was overthrowing a secular dictator, too. Not that I don't think he was doing it directly for bin Laden, the way Obama did it, in such an obvious way of what was going to happen, you know? It was obvious to some of us, but I don't think to them. I don't think that was why they did it. But anyway, the point is, you back the dictators against them, or you back them against the dictators, what are you doing? Creating more head-chopping, suicide-bombing, anti-American lunatics. And so I don't think we should be backing Assad. That just makes the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda right about us. But we sure as hell should not be backing Al-Qaeda against them. I mean, what the hell is this? I can't believe we're having this conversation. You know, here's a conversation I could believe. Like a year ago, when I was saying, oh my God, I can't believe we're backing Al-Qaeda, guys. But now here's the part that I'm saying that I can't believe. Oh my God, I can't believe there's a real argument in public that yes, we ought to be backing Al-Qaeda. This is published in the New York Review of Books. This is published in, or was it New York Magazine? This is, or one of those damn things, I don't know. In Foreign Affairs. It's a cover story in Foreign Affairs. The Journal of the Council on Foreign Relations. Yes, it's time to rehabilitate Al-Qaeda. And in fact, they even use an old picture of bin Laden and Zawahiri. They don't even try to show, like, nice, new, friendly, moderate Syrian Al-Qaeda guys, whoever they are. They could have, I don't know, maybe got Colin Powell's artist to draw us a picture of what they might look like if they existed. They actually use a picture of bin Laden and Zawahiri and say, yeah, never mind your objections. The worst enemy in Syria is Assad, and we got to stop them. And these guys, at least they're not the Islamic State. I know it sounds crazy, but it's in the Wall Street Journal, too. It's in the Wall Street Journal. In fact, they put it in terms of a split between American and Israeli policy. Israel really loves Al-Qaeda. America only kind of loves them. Huh? I know. It sounds stupid, but I'm not the stupid one. I'm just rehearsing the facts for you. It's completely ridiculous. We're supporting Iran and the Badr Brigade and all the auxiliaries of the Ayatollah Sistani against the Islamic State in Iraq, bombing the hell out of the Islamic State in Iraq, in fact, and still at least de facto supporting them in Syria, which is not even on the other side of the border anymore. There is no border anymore. That's where the Islamic State is. It's eastern Syria and western Iraq. So, yep, I know. It sounds ridiculous, but that's only because it is. It's not my damn fault. And then so now you have America backing communists, the Kurds resisting the Islamic State, and you got our allies in NATO are even more hell-bent on getting rid of Assad and backing the jihadists than the U.S., and they want to attack our new communist allies among the Kurds as well. The YPG and the PKK and the guys who have kept the Islamic State out of Kobani, etc. Talk about bizarro world, man. Sun is red, Superman's a bad guy, and all this makes perfect sense. See, here's what you gotta do. You gotta move to Tel Aviv, and then all of this will make perfect sense. I see what's going on here. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more wars in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
Oh, man, I got to get back with that guy Jeremy about the sound collage things to replace those onion clips. Jesus, that thing's like 10 years old, right? How boring. Anyway, Grant, my good friend Grant Smith from the Institute for Research Middle Eastern Policy, that's IRMEP. IRMEP, IRMEP.org. And like I was trying to explain to you before, he's a master at the Freedom of Information Act and dislodging government secrets, U.S. government secrets, mostly about the Israeli government and their Amen Corner, their fifth column in America, and their dirty tricks. And a lot of, you know, what our government's police agencies have on them. And that kind of great stuff. So, anyway, welcome back to the show. Good to talk to you again, dude.
Hey, Scott. Good to be here. Can you hear me okay?
No, you sound absolutely terrible all of a sudden.
Oh, no.
Oh, what? Actually, that's not so bad. Do you have a headset on?
Okay.
Or something?
Yeah, it's not good
headset.
Back on.
No headset.
Okay, sorry. I'm taking it out. Taking it out.
Oh, now I can't hear you at all. Well, he's not gone, everybody. He's just silent now.
No, that can't be.
Oh, now you are. Here, now I can hear you again.
I promise not to present any more technical difficulties the next 5 minutes.
Hey, we're all doing our best here, buddy. It's all right. It's okay. These things happen. I got to go to the Guitar Center and take care of a couple of problems myself today. Anyway, no headsets. Anytime you're adding wires to the chain of audio sounds, you're making the audio sounds diminished in quality, pretty much without exception. So,
okay, all right. Well,
unless the only exception would be if the speaker or the microphone on your phone is blown, and so it has a terrible distortion to it, in which case maybe then the headset would be preferable. But that's
Well, that could very well be. My phone fell into a canal a couple of weeks ago, so who knows?
You sound great right now.
Okay.
You sound great. In fact, isn't it a funny thing that Skype over a cell phone sounds way better than a cell phone over a cell phone?
Yeah. So, yeah, I figured that out.
Yeah, I learned that from Michael W. Dean. It was great advice I got from him. All right, listen, we're just wasting your awesome interview here. Let's get to work. You've got a thing on the blog at antiwar.com right now. It says, poll, most Americans oppose compensating Israel for Iran nuclear deal. So go ahead. What poll's that?
Yeah, sure. Well, it seemed like with all of the attention focused on the Iran nuclear deal that was passed, this mid-month, that it would be great to ask a representative sample of Americans what they thought about some of these quote-unquote compensation packages that have been floating around with the idea that somehow the United States should compensate Israel because of its position opposing and being upset by the accord. So we put out a Google consumer survey to 1,500 people, making it a representative sample of Americans across the United States, and found that not so many Americans agree that we need to be doing anything for Israel. So 7.9% said that they would support boosting U.S. aid from $5 billion a year, or to $5 billion a year from $3.5 billion. 4.1% favored giving Israel bunker buster bombs, which is a proposal that Michael Makovsky of Jinza has been making. 4% supported providing Israel with B-52 long-range bombers. And so those last two are essentially saying, well, why not give Israel the capability it needs to stage a non-nuclear attack on Israel's Iran's facilities, mm-hmm. which is kind of strange. But the advocates of that say, well, it would give Israel deterrent capability, but whatever. 3.4% were in favor of releasing Jonathan Pollard to Israel. Jonathan Pollard, of course, is kind of an issue that pops up every once in a while as, you know, being compensation for getting Israel back to the negotiating table for the peace process, et cetera, and now it's been floated as a way to assuage their problems and opposition to the nuclear deal. But 12.8% said, yeah, hey, do all of those things. And then the real finding was that 67.8% of Americans chose none of the above. And I like this poll because it's on an issue that's at the forefront. People, if they don't know about the Iran nuclear deal, they really are living under a rock. So it was easy to get a very quick response and a very good sample response.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and I think people may know, to give credit to The Onion after I slammed them at the beginning of this thing, they had a joke article that came out a couple of weeks ago that says Obama gives Israel a bunch of ballistic missiles to make them feel better about the Iran deal. And then it was a day or 2 days later that was announced, that America was – and I don't think it was ballistic missiles, but it was pretty close anyway.
Right. And, yeah, I mean, they have a hard time staying ahead. I mean, you can't satirize this stuff.
Yeah. Well, and again, I like, as you're saying, the part about how – well, maybe what we should do, this is a serious proposal in Washington, D.C. What we should do is give them B-52s and bunker buster bombs so that they can go in there and undo the deal we just made with them. Yeah,
right,
that'd be great.
Right. Typical thinking there. And it's kind of outrageous, you know, supplying these ancient bombers, in effect. I know they've been upgrading all of that, but, you know, and that's a deterrent to Iran, but I guess I'm in the camp of a lot of the people you've had on your show recently was thinking that this whole thing is ridiculous, that the negotiations and whatnot have been a waste of time since a lot of these sanctions are really, and you can really see it now, predicated on the idea of targeting Iran really for its support of opposition groups, Israel's rivals in the region, and that's what they'd like to put back in place. The whole nuclear issue is just the best sales vehicle that they could put together to present it to Americans, kind of Iraq war redux. And so if you don't accept the premise that Iran was ever a nuclear threat in any sense, then all of this starts looking very suspicious. And and I think we were talking briefly about how there has been confirmation of the fact that this has been a cash cow for AIPAC and the various lobbying groups in the Constellation, a real way to center attention and whip up Israel and Dane type concern for their own domestic lobbying agenda, but it hasn't had too much to do with reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and that's a real double-edged sword there for them, I think. And maybe I'm too optimistic about this, but it seems to me real ugly that you have, hi, we're here to represent the interests of a foreign power, and we want to prevent this negotiation that could lead to peace between your country and this other one. And we're here just to tell you. And I read where Ehud Barak, the former prime minister of Israel and the former defense minister, said, hey, man, that's going too far here. He contradicted Netanyahu and said outright interfering in the legislative process. You know, making our opinion known, that's one thing. But and trying to figure out how we can work with the Americans once the deal is done for how to implement it in a way that's most beneficial to Israel, that should be our priority. But you want to outright just challenge the American president in this way within the Congress, whatever, I think it's kind of a bridge too far. And I'm hoping that that he's right about that, that it will be, you know, overall it'll be counterproductive for the Israelis, because a lot of people don't really hear much about the Israel lobby, except that they were the one group that was pushing for the war in Syria back in 2013 and 14, while every other part of American society opposed it. There was the Israel lobbyists by the dozens and hundreds on Capitol Hill trying to push for the damn thing. And the same thing going on here. But then maybe it'll work. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Now the music's playing. We got to take a break. Sorry, I talked to you damn much for an interview show. I know, but it's all right. I'll be back in a minute here with Grant F. Smith from the Institute for Research Middle Eastern Policy. IRMEP, I-R-M-E-P. And he wrote also about 1,000 books or so about this issue, too. Check him out on Amazon.com.
So you're a libertarian, and you don't believe the propaganda about government awesomeness you were subjected to in fourth grade. You want real history and economics. Well, learn in your car from professors you can trust with Tom Woods's Liberty Classroom. And if you join through the Liberty Classroom link at scotthorton.org, we'll make a donation to support the Scott Horton Show. Liberty Classroom, the history and economics they didn't teach you.
Hey, y'all, guess what? You can now order transcripts of any interview I've done for the incredibly reasonable price of $2.50 each. Listen, finding a good transcriptionist is near impossible, but I've got one now. Just go to scotthorton.org/transcripts, enter the name and date of the interview you want written up, click the PayPal button, and I'll have it in your email in 72 hours max. You don't need a PayPal account to do this. Man, I'm really going to have to learn how to talk more good. That's scotthorton.org/transcripts. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, the Scott Horton Show, here on Liberty Radio Network. Live noon to 2 on the East Coast, 11 to 1 Texas time. I got Grant F. Smith on the air from the Institute for Research Middle Eastern Policy. Middle East Policy, yeah. IRMEP, I-R-M-E-P, IRMEP.org. And, we're talking about AIPAC right now. Talking about this poll where the American people say, nuts to Israel. Why should they be compensated for us making a peace deal with Iran? Give them weapons? Give them more money? How about give them nothing? And we'll get to Jonathan Pollard in a minute, but I want to pick up with what you mentioned there about this new piece at the Loeb blog. It's based on this thing, the Nelson Report, which I take it is a subscription-only newsletter in Washington, D.C., which I've heard of numerous times, probably mostly through Jim Loeb over the years. And it's described here by Jim Loeb as, you know, the cutting edge insider kind of daily subscription intel report for DC types. And anyway, he quotes a former AIPAC official, which I guess we're going to have to assume is not MJ Rosenberg. It's got to be somebody other than just good old MJ, right? But
right,
former AIPAC official told, because that, the Nelson Report, I don't think, would be passing on a quote from MJ as insider information, right? That's not a knock at him, but that's not – this is somebody else here. And
well, yeah, right.
And what he says here
– I doubt he has confidential treatment either.
Right. Exactly. Well, yeah, you can quote me and say the worst thing you can think of to say, of course.
He's fearless.
Yeah, totally. But so anyway, so here's the five reasons, and I'm not going to sit here and read them, but basically it's in their interest to not have to get jobs. They would rather get paid to work at think tanks to pretend that Iran is a threat to Israel. And that's a hell of a great way to make money.
Well, there are 400 employees at AIPAC. And of course, you know, even MJ would say that they have a great time over there and they're well paid and, you know, they have some late nights. But, you know, the inside scoop that he distilled out of that report is clear. This has been one of those perfect stalking horses for the lobby because they can position it as, you know, this is in the American interest, blah, blah, blah. And they can't do that with a lot of things. The positioning that you were describing, which is that they're going to have to admit, oh, we're just doing this, you know, for the Israelis. That's not the way it's going down. If you look at the Citizens for Nuclear Free Iran and their ads in Hawaii and other places, you know, they're saying Iran is in violation of this many UN resolutions. It's about 20% of the ones number of Israel's, but forget about that. And Iran is pursuing this and that. So they do have skill and the ability to position Iran as a threat to the United States. And the polls that we've done on that indicate that most Americans, at least last fall, thought Iran already had nuclear weapons. So they've been very successful and they don't want to lose this. They have, you know, they've got something called the goodwill in this, in the sense that they've built up this impression that they don't want to lose. They don't want to walk away from this branding campaign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know what? Maybe we should be against the deal too, so we can still have something to do complaining about them doing what they're doing. I don't want to have to get a job. So let's have a war so I can be anti-war. No, I'm just kidding. I'd rather bankrupt myself.
Well, I think we're going to be hearing a lot more of this. The head of an organization called the Conference of Presidents, who's kind of like one of the biggest guys in the pro-Israel lobby, recently trumpeted the fact that the federations in various states are getting involved, various metropolitan areas, citing the fact that the Greater Miami Jewish Federation was working hard to position this as bad for America and working on the campaign. And that's like another AIPAC, except it's just located in Miami. They've got 100 staff members, 2,200 volunteers, according to their tax returns. And so if the lobby can get all of these federations involved, then they'll have 7,230 employees, full-time employees, and another almost 50,000 volunteers that can work on this campaign to mainly scare legislators into supporting it. I've heard a few people on your show and on other shows saying that they think that this is a slam dunk for the president. I'm not so sure. I'm really not sure.
Well, I think I've been the one saying that the most. But, yeah, maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I shouldn't underestimate these guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they've said they'll stop at nothing.
Well, and that does raise the question of what scared old Senator Fulbright when he had the tenacity to investigate the lobby back in the day. His opening chartering letter for that investigation was, there seems to be a lot of things going on internationally that affect domestic politics, like the Levant affair, this false flag attack on U.S. facilities in Egypt designed to get the U.S. to stay in the canal zone. So he clearly thought that there were coordinated campaigns that involved a domestic component and an international component that was really getting U.S. to do some stupid things and fall for these constant machinations of the Israelis. So I tend to think that you're going to see more happening. And I know you've mentioned the Saudi ambassador assassination attempt as being kind of a weird, you know, untimely, and the laptops and all of this stuff. I also think that we're going to see more of that kind of mysterious behavior going on as the months go on.
Well, Ray McGovern has warned, you know, he always reminds us, October 2009, Israel had Jandala kill Iranian officers, and that's what scotched the uranium swap deal then. So, you know, when Netanyahu says he'll stop at nothing, he should be absolutely taken seriously. Now, I'm sorry, you know what? Everybody, read Justin Raimondo today on antiwar.com/Justin about Jonathan Pollard, the scumbag. But I wanted to ask you, you said you had some new stuff coming out. Can you tell me that real quick before we got to go?
Yeah, absolutely.
Or actually, you know what? If you could, I'll keep you another segment. We could talk about Pollard, too.
I'm gonna have to run.
Oh, okay.
But,
well, go ahead about the other thing.
I've got a new piece coming out, but NCIS has basically finally released both their reports and the FBI reports on Jonathan Pollard. And there's some real sort of interesting tidbits about, you know, his considering working at a Washington think before going into intelligence and then becoming an Israeli spy. And I thought that was just really telling about sort of the fanatical attitude of a lot of people who are trying to support Israel, but not knowing how far to go. And so it was interesting to read his sort of choice matrix in all of this process as he talked to his friends and how he really became committed to meeting with Avi Sella and all of this while at what appears to be an Israel bonds gathering in Washington, you know, another Israel lobby that's very active here. So we'll be putting that out pretty soon.
All right, good deal. Well, send it to me when it's done. Thanks, Grant.
Right.
Great talk
Thank
to you. Bye. That's the great Grant Smith, y'all. He's at IRMEP, IRMEP.org. IRMEP.org. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here, and I'm so excited about Commodity Discs from CommodityDiscs.com. They're 1 ounce silver pieces with a QR code engraved on the backside. Scan the code with your phone and get the instant spot price. Commodity Discs are paving the way forward for the alternative currency community in America and around the world. The QR code Commodity Disc. Technology has now finally made a real free market silver currency viable. And anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate gets one free. That's CommodityDiscs.com. All right, guys, welcome. Wow. All right, guys, hang on. I've got to bite my tongue in half. Talk to you when I'm done with that. Anyway. Hey, yeah, I'm me. It's my show. So, yeah, the Pollard thing. He had to go, dude. Grant did. But Pollard, looks like he's going to go, too. And that is, again, look at Justin Raimondo's column today. Keep Pollard in jail and throw away the key, he says. And a couple of different points to make here. First of all, according to Hirsch and according also to Edwin Black writing in the foreword, and also according to this old Wolf Blitzer article that was republished in the Washington Post that I found, and yes, he's a former AIPAC lobbyist, newsletter writer guy, and former journalist for the Jerusalem Post, and he interviewed Pollard. And that's part of what got him a life sentence. But they all have it where, boy, he took a lot of stuff. And I believe I'm correct when I claim that Hirsch and, well, certainly Hirsch says that William Casey, the head of the CIA under Ronald Reagan, said that Pollard gave all the war plans, the attack plan against the USSR, all of it. The coordinates, the firing locations, the sequences. And the Israelis gave it to the Russians in exchange for allowing more Jewish emigration from the USSR. How do you like that? That's our greatest ally in the Middle East, according to our greatest president ever's head of the CIA, director of Central Intelligence, which means he was boss of all the intelligence agencies. That's how it was set back then. Pollard stole and gave to the Israelis the entire war plan for the Soviet Union, and the Israelis turned right around and gave it to him. So, Hell, forget Pollard. What does that say about Israel? Their government. And what their priorities are. And anyway, they claim now that, oh no, Pollard, all this stuff he took wasn't that much or whatever. And then they admit that, yeah, he took a small room full of paperwork. He had a courier pass that allowed him to take tons of fun. And if you look at Justin's piece, you will find links to the declaration by Caspar Weinberger, Reagan's Secretary of Defense, the unclassified version. And in fact, at Phil Giraldi and Grant Smith's Israel conference thingamajig, they had the FBI agent who was the head counterintelligence agent on the Pollard case gave a speech. And you can watch it on YouTube, man. And he basically says, yeah, the worst that you heard of it, at least. And Grant said, hey, are we ever going to get to see the classified version of that Weinberger declaration? And I think he said something like, no. But anyway, this is pretty bad treason. And never mind, you know, it's an offense against the state. That's treason against the American people, man. Given the Soviets an edge in nuclear war. And anyway, and he took an oath, so he owed allegiance voluntarily. So anyway, but Barack Obama's going to bend right over for Benjamin Netanyahu. He's going to release Jonathan Pollard. That's going to be funny, though, watching the celebrations in Israel on TV. So he's greeted as a hero and all this stuff. They're our most bestest ally in the Middle East. Yet, no, they don't fight any of our wars for us. Actually, we fight our wars for them. We have to ask them to stay out or else it'll be too obvious that we're doing what they want. So they're not really our ally in that sense. And yeah, their permanent occupations tend to create permanent enemies for us. So they're not really that good of an ally in that way. And when Jonathan Pollard stole the entire nuclear war plan for the Soviet Union, they turned right around and gave it to the USSR. But other than that, they're our most best ally in the whole wide world, though. They love you even more than George W. Bush loves you. And he loves you so much. You believe that, right? Or Barack Obama, whichever you prefer, the one that you like to believe loves you. All right, anyway. So, Paul, go read Raimondo today. Keep Paul in jail. And he links to Hirsch and he links to Edwin Black, and both of those are worth a read for sure. In fact, Hirsch's is even called, I forgot the exact title. Let me get it right. Why Pollard Should Never Be Released, The Traitor. Don't you get Seymour Hirsch going on Pollard. I'm trying to remember, did I ever interview Hirsch about Pollard? I don't guess I did. Maybe I should. I like Cy Hirsch, man. He's a cranky old bastard. I don't mind. All right, so, yeah, I keep trying and failing to get Jason on the show about Yemen, and that's because I keep waiting till the last minute to invite him, and then that doesn't work. But I'm going to try to get Jason Diss. And, you know, there's this guy, what's the guy's name? I need to write this in my notes here. The McClatchy guy on Yemen. What's his name again? Adam Barron. I need to get Adam Barron on the show. He writes interesting things about Yemen. Hey, it's few and far between the experts on Yemen, you know? How do you find people who know about Yemen? Anyway, last I heard, everybody's hungry and on the verge of starving. And that was about a few weeks ago, really. In fact, if you missed it, listen to that Matthew Akins interview at scotthorton.org/interviews. It's a hell of a thing, man. It's pretty bad. Anyway. And wait, I had a story here. Saudi airstrikes kill 120 civilians in southern Yemen. Attacks leveled residential neighborhood of Taiz. The province of Taiz in southern Yemen, and I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, sorry, Taiz, I don't know, has been a battleground for weeks, with the Houthis controlling much of the city and fighting against a combination of local Sunni tribes and pro-Saudi forces loyal to the former Hadi government. Today, Saudi warplanes got involved in a big way. This is from the 24th, I'm sorry. As usual, the result was an absolute disaster, as Saudi warplanes attacked and leveled a heavily populated residential neighborhood in the port city of Mocha, killing at least 120 civilians and wounding 150 others. And this is what Matthew Akin said about the war up in the province adjacent to Saudi, to the Saudi border, where they've just devastated the town. Just devastated. You know, Ernie Hancock, when he interviewed me last week, he said he saw pictures out of Yemen where it looked just like the Gaza Strip. In other words, like a moonscape. And this is Obama's war right now. This is not even a headline, right? Oh, yeah, Saudi, something about Yemen, whatever. I barely even cover it on this show. But this is America's war. Obama could turn it off like a light switch. That's it. Hey, Saudis, we're done running this war for you and arming this war for you. And it's over. But he won't, and it just keeps going on. The Saudis announce unilateral ceasefires, and then they break them. And all to accomplish a stated goal that is universally accepted to be impossible. The reinstallation of Hadi in power there in Sana. An impossibility. Hey, I'll check out the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism vs. Capitalism, narrated by me, Scott Horton, at audible.com. It's a great collection of his essays and speeches on the important tradition of liberty. From medieval history to the Ron Paul Revolution, Rockwell blasts our status enemies, profiles our greatest libertarian heroes, and prescribes the path forward in the battle against Leviathan. Fascism vs. Capitalism by Lou Rockwell for audiobook. Find it at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, or just click in the right margin of my website at scotthorton.org. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. So I was trying to get this lady on, Sadia Aden, to talk about Somalia. She had this interesting thing about Obama in Somalia. That hadn't worked out yet, but I'm hoping it will. I heard her interviewed by somebody else and kind of spaced out, but seemed like she knew what she was talking about. Try to get somebody on to talk about Somalia at least every once in a while, man. It's a real problem, you know? What America does to Somalia. I think it's a real kind of sign of how, you know, the empire's place in American society, where Americans actually have no idea that our government has any involvement in Somalia whatsoever, that the African Union there, force there, is supported by the United States. That's why they're there. They're working for us. And just how much harm they cause. Do they still have Nightline? Have they ever done a single story on Nightline where they talked about any of this? I remember even South Park did a great one about the Somali pirates. They said, oh, yeah, you know, their fishing is screwed up because the Europeans dumped a bunch of nuclear waste off their coast and all this and that kind of thing. But no mention of the regime change. No mention that it's a country at war because America came in and smashed it. And the story is told a few places. I think Jeremy Scahill's piece in The Nation. Well, there's two of them. One is about the CIA's secret sites in Somalia. That's a more narrow topic. But then the other one is just Blowback in Somalia, I think is the title of it. And at one point in there, there's one long paragraph, I think, or two or three paragraphs, where he really breaks down in chronological order from the dawn of the terror war, how America made everything worse and worse and worse and worse. And then, of course, used worse and worse and worse as an excuse to keep making things worse and worse and worse. It's the entire terror war writ small and complete with hundreds of thousands of rotting corpses of women and children and elderly and sick who starved to death. A terrible famine hit East Africa, but Somalia was war-torn and so got hit the hardest. And according to FuseNet, which is the it's an NGO backed by the U.S. and Britain, they said that 600-something thousand Somalis had died in 2011 and 12, well, I guess especially in 11, but 10 through 12 there. And, in fact, it was Anthony Lake, Bill Clinton's old buddy, who was in charge of the UN program to get the food to the people who didn't. And a big part of the reason, I guess, at least that they invoked, was because of the presence of Al-Shabaab, the rebels. Al-Shabaab, that was nothing until America made them by fighting them. I know, sometimes it's hard to tell, right? Wait a minute, Scott. Which model of creating terrorist groups are we talking about? The Hamas model, where Israel created Hamas? Or the Hezbollah model, where Israel created Hezbollah by invading Lebanon and staying and treating all the local Shia population like garbage and forcing them to create such a thing in opposition? So that's different. Gotta be specific about these things, you know. But anyway, I took a crack at it as well. If you want to read my take on Somalia, just type in my name, Scott Horton, FFF, for Future of Freedom Foundation, and Somalia. The article is called U.S. Government Responsible for Somalia's Misery. And I guess they say Al-Shabaab is not what it once was, but it's still more than what it was once before that, that's for sure. And the country is still under the occupation, as my most recent understanding anyway, of the Ethiopians, the Kenyans, the Ugandans, and the Burundian armies are all occupying the place on your dime. Well, you know, to keep the bad guys at bay. The bad guys that the Americans made. You know, in that Hezbollah, more than Hamas sense. Anyway, it's a hell of a thing, in case you care. You might consider learning about it. Alright. And then the other thing I want to talk about, what the hell? Well, let me mention, Ron Paul has a thing out about Wesley Clark. That'll be running on antiwar.com tomorrow, and the call for concentration camps for Americans who get out of line. And you know what Ron's position on that's going to be. But then, and this is... this is interesting. This guy actually sent this article to antiwar.com, and yeah, no, we're not running it as a viewpoint, that's for sure. And it's a new report. I actually haven't read the report. I really should, huh? It's the Commission on Global Security, Justice, and Governance. Co-chaired, oh, by Madeleine Albright. And, you know, it's the perennial exercise of these, you know, liberal interventionist types to try to reinvent the UN. If only it was more powerful. If only we had a world federal government with a monopoly on war. If only America could be stripped of its veto power on the UN Security Council. Hey, what about the other guys and their veto power? If only we had a full global democracy with the representatives of the governments of all the world represented in the General Assembly to make the world laws and to run the thing, then everything would be fair. We might have a new communist man who cares only about waking up in the morning so that he can share with others. And we'll never have a war again. And don't worry, you don't even need to consider whether what we're describing here is a fascist totalitarian dictatorship. I mean, what would that even mean to have a world government other than a single monopoly on nuclear weapons? And I guess the good news is that's not going to happen. Because there are way too many people in the states with nukes who will never give them up. That's a real problem itself. But anyway, you know, I don't know, man. This is almost like a religion to these people. You know what I mean? Let's hear a real plan. I guess I'll have to read the thing. Of course, they want to raise taxes and more regulation on business through the World Trade Organization and this kind of thing. That's all kind of, you know, over the long term, hardening the soft agreements and that kind of thing, as they put it, right? Eh, global regulatory state. And that sucks and everything, but a real world army? A real one. A real monopoly on force for the planet? I know Star Trek tries to make you think that that's progress. In fact, basically every movie about the future makes you think that's inevitable. But you might try out individualism instead. And nationalism is poison. You'll get no argument from me there. But, yeah, world government. I don't even understand how it's a nice dream for people rather than some kind of nightmare, you know? I remember, actually, the first thing I ever learned about world government was in 1984. Where I understood it to mean, and I guess people argue about this sometimes, I understood that the way I understood it was the world was not really divided in three. There was a single world state that, you know, eventually at the highest levels, the Big Brother regime in Oceania was a mirror image and part of the exact same regime that existed in Eurasia and East Asia too. And that was just the scheme of the government to keep, of the world state, to keep itself divided in thirds and the thirds at war with each other constantly. Just to keep the people on edge. Just to keep them desperate. Just to get them to rally around the power that enslaved them. And so, yeah, who wants that? Not me. Doesn't sound to me. And why wouldn't a world government operate that way, right? Why would a true world government operate in the interest of peace rather than in the interests of whoever bribed them? Just like every other damned government on the planet. So, the good thing is it's a dream of such fools that it's, I don't think, a threat. I used to think this was a real problem, and they keep trying. Hey, Madeleine Albright ain't nobody. But they ain't. They might try.